the pandemic, I think for all of us, obviously, it just felt like it was this whisper out there and then kind of all of a sudden like hit everybody pretty quickly. And, you know, in addition to doing all the things that everyone has talked about in terms of adapting to work from home and things like that for our business, how do we help our clients through this and then very quickly adapt our own organization to help those clients? And I think we frankly didn't know, was the bottom going to fall out of our own business?
That's Jennifer McDonald, Chief Client Officer of North America at VML-YNR, a global brand and customer experience agency. She leads a 250-person client engagement team in the U.S., and is responsible for making sure that they have the right team and model for every client to ensure their success. And in response to the global COVID pandemic in 2020, her team and company had to get a lot more fluid.
We empowered people closest to the business to kind of say, okay, what do these clients need? Work with those clients, develop plans. And I say plans as if this was like a long planning process. It's sometimes in a matter of hours or like daily scrums to figure out what they needed. And then as leaders in the organization, working as quickly as possible to like shift folks between jobs.
So what does it take to establish and lead a fluid organization in this new world of work? What does it take to pivot and adapt in real time as the pace of change speeds up to an unprecedented degree? And how does this benefit companies and the people who work for them in the long run? Welcome to Strategic Momentum, the podcast that helps you achieve meaningful work-life fit in an ever-changing world through the inspiring stories, actionable tips, and pragmatic advice behind those that found it. I'm your host, Connie Steele. We had Jen on the show back in episodes 70 and 71 to talk office politics, but I knew I had to have her back after I learned about the transformation that VML-YNR went through in 2020 and 2021. We all had to make changes to the way we worked, and I wanted to share how an organization this large could respond with such fluidity. And my favorite thing about it is that their strategy hinged on supporting and empowering their people. P.S., we talked about P&Ls a little bit in this episode. That's profit and losses. Now, on to our interview. So glad to have you back on the show today, Jen.
Good to see you, Connie, or to hear you.
You know what? It'd be really great if you could share your career journey, because we didn't really have a chance to do that in some of the other podcast episodes, as well as those important milestones that have led you to where you are today.
Gosh. All right. My career journey. Well, it's actually interesting. I'll maybe go back to the very beginning, which I guess maybe the very beginning is college. I was actually a public policy major and a German minor. So I'm certainly not necessarily using either one of those in my day-to-day world. And kind of in my mind's eye at that point in time, I saw myself working for a nonprofit, solving kind of big world issues, or to kind of for a government agency. And actually had some really fantastic internships in college, one with the state of North Carolina working for the governor's teacher advisor, and another one with Donna Shalala's office, who was Clinton's Secretary of Health and Human Services. And they were really amazing experiences and ones that made me realize I did not want to work in government. So the reason why that's even at all relevant is going into my senior year of college, I was really lost, not knowing what to do, and frankly, not having a family or any family friends who worked in the private sector at all. I was a military brat. The only people I knew were teachers, nurses, and fighter pilots. And so I had no context at all. And I looked around at others around me and kind of were wondering, you know, what were other people doing? And honestly, by happenstance, fell into a job at a software company. And I think in retrospect, the reason why I took it was the people seemed young, smart, ambitious, and it was in Washington, D.C. And I thought, well, if this doesn't work out, I can at least go back and use my major and go work on the Hill or something. So, but as it turned out, I really kind of found that there was something that, I mean, it was kind of the beginning of the dot-com era. And so, you know, looking back now, I've certainly seen more than I kind of even had context for back then, working for a company that while I was there went from 150 people to 2,000 people. We went public during that time. We went through kind of massive ups and downs and really were kind of in the middle of being a part of a lot of organizations' digital transformation. And I started out really kind of like working with the software and implementing it, but quickly found out that I was much more interested in the stories that were created kind of through our technology and in kind of the marketing side of things more than I was in the technical side. And so that was the beginning, I guess, of essentially going from there to some other startups to, you know, Connie, you and I met years ago at AOL when that was, I explained to all the kids today that, you know, that was the internet at the time, 30 million subscribers. And honestly, I kind of thought I made it when I got to AOL. And I do remember asking my bosses on my first day, hey, there's this thing called broadband coming. What's our plan for that? And they were like, oh, no one will ever not need dial up. And I was like, is that right? I don't know, but I'm 26. So I guess maybe you know better than I. But between AOL and this company, MicroStrategy, was a business intelligence software company and a couple of startups in between, kind of was always essentially at that intersection between creativity and technology and business and kind of the marketing side of, you know, storytelling and really getting to, I mean, gosh, I remember like building our first websites and, but at the same time doing huge at AOL, you know, doing huge programs that would show up at Walmart and Target. And so kind of like blending digital and traditional. So in now it was 13-ish years ago, my husband and I made the decision to move back to his hometown in Kansas City, Missouri. And I sort of wondered what I would do in Kansas City. There's plenty of things to do in Kansas City, by the way, but kind of for career-wise. And I sort of saw that I had had a real kind of range of experiences, but wasn't necessarily a specialist in any particular part of marketing and thought that agency side might be a good place for me to go. And it turned out I joined VML and had a book of business and clients that we were working with. And I just loved diving in with those clients to figure out what their problems were and then to kind of bring the solutions to bear to help them. And our solutions at VML were often very digitally forward. And again, I think kind of at a nice transition point where a lot of companies back in 2008 were still thinking very much TV first. And you know, now it's very much looking at a totally integrated system. And now my role is chief client officer at now VML Y&R, lots of new consonants, but we're a part of a big conglomerate called WPP and a global marketing powerhouse. And in my job, I am really privileged to work with lots of fantastic companies. I have some that are really my babies, like Wendy's and Sam's Club and Napa Auto Parts and others, and then others where I just make sure that all the right people are in place to make sure that they're successful. So suffice to say that I feel like I've had a lot of very kind of tactical experience on the client side in so many different areas of marketing, always hitting like technology, creativity, marketing, storytelling. And I feel like it's kind of all culminated to be able to do that for all kinds of companies in my current role.
Well, I love hearing essentially this mashup that you've created. You have a mashup story and that, you know, you started in one place and that you've been able to test and learn and take the best pieces from all of it while honestly going broad, but at moments also going deep and fluidly going between, you know, you talked about being traditional and digital and learning how to think of the technology implementation, but yet flipping to the storytelling piece. But at the end of the day, the point that you made about where you like to play best isn't just one specific area. It's really the blending of, you said that, creativity, technology, business, and storytelling. And that ultimately has led you to the role that you're in now, where it is one role, but that one role is this super job where you have to pull all of those skills together. And that, you know, is something that I totally see in terms of where the future of work is going, so that somebody can really bring all of their expertise to bear.
I mean, I don't know whether there was any one point in time where I kind of noticed that, but what I did notice that is that, like, where I got most excited was when I saw different work streams coming together. So when I really kind of look back, a lot of the work that I've done, you know, before I even came to an agency, was like new product launches, new partnership creation, working in new startups, developing, you know, new brand identities. And so, for example, a startup I worked for, a company called Revolution, and they developed a website, revolutionhealth.com, which was at the time a competitor to WebMD. There could have been a role for me to become, let's say, like the SEO expert and ensure that kind of all of our content on the website was totally optimized for search engines. There could have been a role for me to do the PR launch. There could have been a role, but my interest was like figuring out how to integrate kind of all of these things together and move along kind of in a path. So I think probably one of the more fun jobs I had had, and this, oh my gosh, this totally dates me. But when I first started at AOL, I was hired to work on this idea that someone had for the AOL prepaid card. And so before you laugh, this was a time where people had, you know, monthly unlimited access to dial-up internet, but there was like a consumer need for people who might not, you know, be able to pay that monthly fee or only need kind of a bit of internet. And so I was hired to be the effectively like the product manager for that card. And I don't know why anyone hired me actually for it. I think I was like 25 or 26 years old. But that program was super interesting because not only could I work to sell it to Target and Walmart, but I could help with the, like, when we did the test launch in Florida and get the radio campaign, approve the, you know, circular flyers, develop the packaging, go to the packaging plants, figure out what kind of packaging we needed, do the photo shoot to figure out what was on our packaging. What was interesting is like, it was all in service of bringing this thing to bear. And each of those aspects had deep expertise. Like, I learned so much about the people who are like packaging engineers. You go to 4 years of college for that. And they even had to teach me a lot. Like, I would ask, I'm like, hey, how about you change this thing? And they're like, if we change this thing, we literally have to go like re-engineer the plant. I'm like, okay, so what else could you change to accomplish my goal? And they're like, here you go. So I think having experiences like that made me realize that I was interested in kind of how things kind of came together versus going deep. And there was one role that I had where I was in charge of email marketing. And at first I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, we're going to do all this great stuff with email marketing. Email marketing is great. But then I was like, every day I'm like, are we still doing this email marketing? Am I still getting like super deep into all of these tools? And they are really important. But I just realized that I was losing energy the deeper I went. And so I think it was kind of not a moment, but just a realization that as I was looking at different kind of like job descriptions and stuff and like recognizing and kind of reflecting back on my experiences, I was like, I think I just want to be in a place where I can bring stuff together and I can recognize like the relationships between all of this stuff. And that not every job in an agency is about that, by the way. We have deep experts in specific things in an agency. And I feel like my specific job is knowing which experts to kind of pluck and get, you know, because you hire agencies often to get that deep expertise. It just happens to be that I think kind of my role is about more integrating them together and sort of be like, okay, is this aligned with your business goals, your marketing goals? And by the way, let's get a little bit specific about the three things that you have to do in order to get there. And then go from there. So I don't think there was a moment necessarily, but there were probably a set of experiences that I had where I had to just be a little more real with myself about where I was getting energy and where I found that energy was being depleted.
You wouldn't have ever been able to figure that out had you not had all those experiences too. And I think that's kind of the key learning that I got of it and hearing all that stuff. And this is what, you know, I've been seeing is that how do you know what fits at the end of the day for you until you give yourself the opportunity to experience the breadth of things, but also some depth as well, because you won't know. And I think for all of us, we're talent stacking all the time. So you are talent stacking and getting experience across all these different disciplines in order to achieve that one goal. And you had that opportunity to sample all of them and go deep if you wanted to. But as you were stacking things, it kind of then created that visual. All right, as I stack it, I don't want to build like this one house with my Lego bricks. Like, oh, I'm going to start building this one house, and then I'm going to actually build a tower because that's what it is. I'm like, oh, I like to build, maybe there's this little home over here and then a tree over here and then there's something over here. But then the bigger picture is this whole environment that I want, which all comes together versus the singular elements that I think a lot of people have been taught to focus on is that go deep. It's that expertise that you want versus the landscape of everything that you can bring together and integrating it all together because you have interest in so many different areas. It's not that it's not interesting to you. It's that it's what's the depth of interest that you have. And so you're seeing that as sort of a default now is that not everybody really wants to go deep, but the measure of success prior was you had to be deep. You had to be a specialist. That is the way to get to the top. And like, no, that's not what most people want anymore.
Yeah. Or redefining what the specialist kind of like means. I mean,
yeah,
I guess I'm a marketing specialist. I certainly couldn't do, you know, you couldn't plot me into any career, that's for sure. But like, it's kind of like, how narrowly do you define that? And maybe the possibly a clue for me was, I think it was right after I left AOL, I was doing some consulting work for XM Radio on their email marketing program. And like, I dove, you know, right in and they wanted me to work there full time running this program after I worked there for a few months consulting. And it wasn't that I didn't like the company or the people or any of that, but I was just like, I think I've learned everything that I want to learn in this. And I don't mean that in a flippant way, but I was like, I think they probably need someone different in my mind. And then, yeah, turn that opportunity down. I was like, I'm fine with continuing to consult, but this is not, I just really was like, okay, I think I'm done. I think I'm done with, I don't want to get any deeper on this particular subject. But listen, email marketing is sort of one part of a, you know, obviously a lot of big things like, you know, should I have become this CRM specialist?
How has this career mashup that you've created enabled you to continue to build this level of personal and professional momentum for yourself, as well as for others?
I should also say before I answer that question, Connie, that I do think maybe my superpower is understanding what I don't know and kind of grabbing the best people and the smartest people for the job and kind of keeping us moving in one direction. So you said all of those things that I do, which I do think I do, but I also recognize I do not do them by myself. So I would just feel like I need to caveat that first of all. But to be honest, I feel like if you really are present in every sort of situation that you're in and recognize that, you know, you're always learning something and that is fuel for the next thing, I think that's just been a really positive way to think about it. I think that it can be a mistake to believe that every moment in one's career has to be this stepping stone in a very kind of, and you talk about this in your book, a stepping stone to kind of the next thing where you're constantly building. Sometimes when there's a point in your career where it's not necessarily going as well, that is just as important and kind of provides just as much fuel for kind of the next step. So very specifically for me, when I left MicroStrategy, which was my first job, I was really excited to kind of see whether I could be successful somewhere else, and went to a startup. And at that startup, it was really, I was kind of a one-man band in the kind of marketing communications group. And I had some colleagues who were in different overseas markets who were great. But I found out from that experience that I did not like working by myself, where I wasn't working with a team. That so my next kind of step was very intentionally towards somewhere where I knew that I would be working in kind of a team environment to create something. So I guess just, I think, embracing all the things that you're kind of having to do in the moment or in a particular job, and recognizing that you're not stuck there. You can make your own way. Now, I also will say that I feel privileged that because I've always worked either for a tech company or an agency, both of those types of organizations at their best should be flexible, because the world around them is changing so quickly. And so I think I've just always had that mindset that if you don't exactly like this, then you are able to chart your own path and make a change. And that is as much on you as it is on the organization to provide that to you. And I recognize that's probably easier. Well, it's always probably easier said than done. But in some organizations that are more established or rigid, that is probably a little bit harder. And certainly I see that with many of our clients that are old line companies or have been around for 100 years and have very established roles, that's not necessarily a muscle that they always have in terms of recognizing that somebody might come and say, well, I'm not exactly right for this job, but how about if I also do this other thing? And that can break an organization. But I've been lucky enough to work for organizations that actually, that didn't break them. In fact, they sort of embraced it. I've probably had way too many jobs where I was the first person in that role. That's just actually a little bit of a scary statement now that I'm thinking about it. I have not often been a replacement for someone in a job. I have definitely been a replacement for certain people, but I've often been in like a brand new role or job within an organization. So maybe that, I don't know what that says, but that's
What was really insightful that you said with respect to the mindset and experience you had is, you know, in any role that you have, you're learning, and the context of that experience and understanding what it can give you in the moment is that value, even though you may feel it's not going right for you, there's still a positive outcome from it that helps you learn. And so I'd love to kind of get your perspective too on how you've traditionally defined success and how you think others also may have defined success now. So now that shift, because what you've sort of conveyed, it's this shift from a linearity and how you think of success, or how you kind of have the stair step piece, to one where maybe it's non-linear, fluid, and even there isn't this clarity that it's a straight line path. It might be a sort of a lateral piece, but it's really about that realization that success takes different forms and how you think about that. So love to share, get your point of view on that.
I think for me personally, the way that I've at least defined success for myself is honestly about being useful. And I know that sounds, maybe that doesn't make sense, but it's like and I recognize that not everybody's like this. Like for me, it is not about the title or kind of like where one is in the hierarchy, but the success is in like the impact that you feel like you can make, or kind of how useful you think that you have been. There have been times where I felt like I had a title and a role that on paper looked really good, but I kind of thought it, if I thought it was actually not really that useful, then I was less happy, if that makes sense. So I kind of am constantly wondering, how can I be useful? And sometimes being useful means like helping others be successful. Sometimes it means pointing clients in the right direction. Sometimes it means rolling up my sleeves and kind of digging in on a project. But I feel most energized on any kind of like given day if I feel like that I've been useful and have like at least moved a ball forward in some sense. And I think that, I mean, we all see, especially organizations that are maybe under stress or have different corporate cultures and corporate cultures that are super political or maybe kind of there. I mean, listen, there are jobs that exist out there that probably on a day-to-day basis, the only thing you're doing are blocking out other people within your organization. And it's not necessarily about moving a ball forward, like even a little bit. And I don't necessarily think that those are, I actually think some people are quite successful in those roles. I don't know whether that's necessarily my cup of tea, but, and then I kind of like have the mindset that what's the next logical, like for any given problem, what's the next logical step that you can take to get to solution, even if you're not going to totally, at some point in your career, you're solving really big problems that can't be solved in a day or a week or a month or sometimes not even a year. But like, if you kind of have a vision of where you want to go and every day you're making next logical sort of steps towards that, you can look back and realize that you've made a fair amount of progress.
So let's talk about these corporate structures and organizations in 2020 and 21, where it's been incredibly challenging for most organizations and people within them. So there has been this need to constantly adapt in a world of uncertainty and change and that no one's really ever faced before. So, and you know, and VML YNR has been no different. So I'd love to have you share with us some of the challenges that you and your organization went through at the start.
Yeah. Well, at the start of the pandemic, I think for all of us, obviously, it just felt like it was this whisper out there and then kind of all of a sudden like hit everybody pretty quickly. And, you know, in addition to doing all the things that everyone has talked about in terms of adapting to work from home and things like that, for our business, we have hundreds of clients around the world. And the first kind of mode we went into was, how do we help our clients through this? And then very quickly adapt our own organization to help those clients. And when you think that our clients range from, let's say, a client like Wendy's, whose sales initially like fell almost immediately, or some retailers that had to close their doors. And then on the flip side, clients like Microsoft, who suddenly they'd been trying to get people to use Teams for years. And then everyone, I mean, I can't actually remember what the stat was, but we did hear it from them of like a week over week increase that kind of that middle of March was some like is like thousands of percents. And then, you know, it was like crashing. And so then there were also clients who were like, oh my gosh, I need more help than others. So we really kind of quickly first pivoted to just giving, honestly, empowering the people who were closest to each client to say, your job is to figure out like, what does this client need? Also be really empathetic to the situation that each of those clients are facing, not just as a business, but as human beings, because everybody was kind of adapting. And I think we, frankly, didn't know, was the bottom going to fall out of our own business? I mean, we had clients that shut things off. I mean, the state of Tennessee, we do all of their tourism work. That was immediately shut off. But at the same time that was being shut off, there were kind of other clients where work was really increasing. So again, like we empowered people closest to the business to kind of say, okay, what do these clients need? Work with those clients, develop plans. And I say plans as if this was like a long planning process. It's like sometimes in a matter of hours or like daily scrums to figure out what they needed. And then as leaders in the organization, working as quickly as possible to like shift folks between jobs. And I felt like I'm not a resource manager, but I felt like a master resource manager, you know, at some point. I mean, I think there was in like a couple of weeks, I think we had shifted in my organization alone, shifted like 75 people. I mean, it was just kind of like, okay, great. This client's down. You're best needed here. At the same time where other parts of our organization were trying to figure out how do you do productions virtually? How do you run whiteboarding workshops virtually? In some cases, like Sherwin-Williams is a client. It's like, how do you get paint chips to people's homes so that they can make choices and then do, you know, curbside pickup? And like, what are the websites that one need? Like, what's the consumer experience look like there? Let's go and get that done in a matter of weeks. So that was kind of the beginning of the pandemic. And in that world, we actually ended up growing, which was fantastic. And now, you know, are continuing to grow as needs shift and change. The other thing that we kind of also, you know, we told people like, this is not a job of like protecting our revenue, but like it's a moment to be our client's most important partner. And if you kind of have that mindset, you know, listen, there is a way to go about it to say, oh, well, you guys can't cancel your contract because you need to give us 4 weeks notice and to kind of make, or it's a, hey, you know, do you really need to do TV commercials now? Or do you really need to kind of like work on this other, you know, become ready for a director commerce world? And maybe we should shift what you were going to do over here and we can do it somewhere else. Like, I think that was kind of the mindset that we took. And in the beginning, it was kind of like a big, you know, throwing everybody up in the air and kind of having them come down in different places. Like, and then as months went on, we sort of saw that there were parts of our organization that we needed to make sure that we invested in more customer experience strategy. Like, we definitely needed more, you know, creative talent. We needed to have more commerce and e-commerce specialists. Like, and so we kind of pivoted from that sort of like really quick moment of shifts to then kind of investing while at the same time kind of doing that shifting.
So quite a bit going on. Yeah, and what I hear is this, what's been really interesting in you conveying this whole journey to be a much more fluid organization, one that can adapt and pivot really quickly to change. It was starting with a fundamental goal of being customer, truly customer centric and human centric first and foremost, and using that as that kind of North Star, and realizing subsequently to build out that plan, the various plans that you're running in parallel. Some will be much more in depth, some that needs to be immediate. But in all of these plans that you're creating, it is always thinking about the people, but subsequently, how can you iterate as quickly as possible and very much trying to work towards as agile of a business as possible. I heard you say like we had daily scrums, right? Which is something that comes from, you know, the technology world where you have this, you know, it's not about creating that huge offering first. It is, you got to start somewhere. And then what is that initial MVP that you can begin with? And so it seems as if you always had to figure, well, what is that MVP in this new world where you can be partners to each of the various clients that you have? And then what does that even look like? But empowering the people on your teams to figure out what that initial MVP is and say, well, what's the plans around it, even delivering that at a client-facing level? But I'd love to hear too, how did you help those people who now are in this role where you have to even be more dynamic than they were before, prepare for this impending change, help them continually build the right relationships and network of support so that when you're flexing up and down and left and right and moving things around as dynamically as possible within your own organization, you're being an agile business within your organization. You're also helping your clients be an agile business. How did you ensure that there's still this level of connectivity and support where people feel like they can do their best work?
Yeah. I don't think that we like always got it fully right. But we tried. There were a few things that we did kind of at multiple levels of the organization. So kind of at, call it like the client leadership and business leadership level, the principles were, you know, do great work for our clients, care about our people, and frankly, be transparent along the process. You're moving so fast, you just don't have time, like you don't have time to hide information, and probably you actually, people need more information than less. So on a management and client leadership level, we have daily scrums that frankly, we still have today, quick, like they never go over, and like quick hitting, like, you know, highlights, lowlights of what's going on in various businesses. When that first started, it was really a matter of, okay, this account doesn't need any more people anymore. Oh my gosh, this account has some. And then it would be like a real time, okay, like let's talk offline and go, you know, do a switch. Like, but the daily scrum was kind of born to just like share information so that then decisions could happen within this network of client leaders. Now, as it related to kind of making sure that people within our organization felt connected, I'm sure there are things that could have been done better. We tried to make sure kind of like that everyone, you know, that everyone who had any kind of like management or leadership responsibility were just like, please like check in on people, like as not like, are you doing work, but check in on human beings to see how they're doing, because it, especially early on working virtually, you just kind of, you're like, you know, you just don't see people. You can't manage in the same way that you would in an office when you physically have eyes on someone and you don't know what they're going through. So we encouraged that. I am sure that there were people that were lost in that situation, but we certainly encouraged that. And then we also had a lot, and we continue to have a lot of moments in time where they're kind of full company meetings where we addressed a multitude of issues. And again, we're as transparent as possible about what was going on. And those meetings could be at a department level, a client level, a city level, and in a full organization level. I give a lot of props to our CEO who really played the role of just making sure that we were kind of like all focused on the right things. And frankly, and he knows kind of the right things at the end of the day in a business like ours are our people. I think just knowing that that was a priority and telling people like check in with folks, find out how they're doing, make them feel surrounded. But everyone handled the last year very differently. There were some people who were like, I am just happy that I'm here and employed and I'll run and climb any mountain that you want. There were other people who were, I can't climb another mountain, or some people who needed encouragement to go climb the other mountain. And it was just like, you sort of had to meet people where they were at with the speed we sometimes needed. I mean, there were definitely a few conversations that I had with some folks who were in some ways mourning the job that they no longer had. Like if there was a client that went away and they're like, wait, but I liked working on that client. You're like, great. The client is no longer here. You're now working on a new client. Like normally we would like for you to have 75 choices, but right now there's one choice. So, and not trying to be not, but being empathetic to like, this is hard, but this is what we've got. We've got to move forward and do. Now I feel like we're in a totally different place now, and you can read the news and just sort of see that 2020 was, people were most like staying in place, and now there's a, you know, great awakening. People have had some time to reflect and decide what do they want to do with their life. And sometimes they're very much in the right place and sometimes they're not. We've had somebody leave and become a professor. We've had someone leave and become a nurse. Like we've had people leave and take care of their kids, and that's life and that is real and that is happening. And so now we're in a different game, which is less about moving people and ensuring they're in the right place within the organization, which is still happening, but also constantly kind of recruiting in. So it's just kind of a different time right now.
Adding to your point that there's this shift now in people recognizing a need to find the right fit for themselves. Whereas before, the business environment was, shoot, how do we find kind of the right fit for our business with who we have? Because there was so much uncertainty, and that was something that people could get their heads wrapped around. And then fast forward, it's like, well, wait, now that there is some sort of predictability, but not exactly full predictability, and this opportunity to really be introspective, it's like, well, what now do I personally need, or individuals personally need, which then creates a whole new, another flux of change for that person and the company.
Yeah. And sometimes, and I'm hoping that, like, you know, some of the things that we had always done just became magnified in the last year and a half and will continue to get better. And some things are new practices, but one of the things that I'm most proud of is, you know, so in my job, I work with a super talented group of business and client leaders who individually run, you know, multi-million dollar accounts for us or portfolios of accounts. And one of the things that we had started to do very much prior to COVID was all get together pretty frequently to kind of talk about, it could be common challenges that we were facing, it could be talent needs and opportunities, and it could be the weather.
Spotting all the trends, basically, trying to see what those trends are.
Exactly. But now, I think now we kind of look at that group of leaders is really kind of a core to a more agile organization. Like, each of those leaders has people who work for them, but because they're all networked together and we are all, our success is so intimately tied to one another, that now when there are needs, and those needs could be like, how do I solve a social media problem on my account? The need could be, I have a person who's really talented, but not totally cast in the right place. The need could be, I need a new person. Now they all know each other on a human level, and it is much easier for them, frankly, to be calling each other and problem solving with one another and not having to go through like a hierarchical system to get problem solved, but they're sort of this networked group of leaders together and with fewer fiefdoms, a recognition that, you know, like, we all kind of have to give and take at any kind of point in time to just make sure the whole is healthy. And that has been helpful for people, because we keep on saying that if there is talent that is good and wants to stay here and wants to be engaged, but maybe isn't exactly in the right place, chances are there's probably somewhere else or another business problem that exists out there that they could be solving. I mean, we just had an example of that recently, where a young gentleman who was hired to work on our Intel business, and he, I think, was doing a good job, but really just was having more, he's new to the advertising industry, just like having a bit of a challenging time relating to the products that he was selling and the world of acronyms and all of that, but really talented, super bright. And after a time, having discussions about wanting to be part of a different type of team and a different type of product that he could relate to. And so, you know, just last week, it's like we moved this person from Intel to Wendy's. It happened fairly seamlessly, but a good example of leaders working together to find the right solution for someone that they believed was very talented. And, you know, time will tell, but I think that gentlemen will probably end up staying in our industry longer because of this type of move, and ultimately be more successful because of it.
VML really has delivered this really great example of alignment, finding that alignment and ultimately fit for not just the processes and approaches to be able to best service the clients, but really it sounds like for its employees, and recognizing that if there isn't the level of investment, understanding, you know, those strategic needs, desires, wants, interests of each of their employees and seeing their talents for what they are and the aptitudes for what they have, or using very conformist metrics to say, are you successful or not? But really trying to work together and look at how do we create that relevant plan of attack and find the solution so that this person's talents fit in the right place. And I think for a lot of organizations, many times they assume that when you hire people, you'll have this checklist of requirements. And if you have this, therefore, it will be the right fit. And yes, you're also looking at a cultural elements and some soft skills. But the realization is that a lot of times, once you put that person in that role may not be the best fit because it's changed.
Yeah.
Or there weren't the right questions asked of that individual, or even maybe an understanding of what the team really, really needs. So it's really cool to see all the ways that this has been a very iterative approach to then figure out how to optimize the employee talents, the culture, and sounds like ultimately the success is proven out into the growth of the MLY&R.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely ways that we can be better, but it's certainly we have the right intention and a lot of good examples of it having been done. I'm sure we could benefit from it being more systematized, or, you know, there's definitely, definitely opportunities. And I don't know whether we've fully figured out how to do all of it virtually. And I should also say that it's always easier done with roles that don't require kind of like hard skills, if you will. And those hard skills might be knowledge of various software programs or like design skills or, you know, things like that. But certainly, you know, the world of marketing is very much changing. So we've just had to make sure that we try to adapt as much as possible.
And what else do you feel you, as well as your company, has permanently sort of adapted to and adopted really to lead your teams in the most optimal way going forward? Because there is a new normal. There is no going back to the old. So, you know, what do you feel now is sort of that permanent way that you're going to work to continue to flex dynamically with this continually changing world?
I think, I mean, and this is not a new story, but I do think one of the things that allowed us to adapt really quickly in the beginning of COVID was the fact that in the US, we're one P&L instead of a lot of individual cities having separate P&Ls, because there are a lot of agencies that operate with separate P&Ls. So it would be like, I'm just making this up. Other agencies might be like, okay, my Dallas office, I only can do things in Dallas, and no way can I give, if I give any work to Atlanta, then I lose and they win. And because we were one P&L, it allowed us to be much more fluid between cities and say that, oh gosh, we have to, like, let's say stand up a new client. Intel happened to be a client that we won pre-COVID. And maybe we would have thought, oh, well, that's just going to be a client in one of our larger offices, Kansas City. In reality, now Intel has people in Kansas City, in Seattle, in Dallas, in Chicago, in New York, all working in Miami, like all working on this one client. And they're very much like working across borders, if you will. And you don't feel like you have to be in person all the time. And even though we will eventually be going back a couple of days a week, because we believe that that kind of in-person collaboration is key to creativity, I think that there are some elements of these virtual teams that will never change and that we've just figured actually can work okay. The amount of time that I've personally saved getting on and off airplanes or going in and out of, you know, like airports for 1-hour meetings, like across the country, I just don't think that's going to be a thing anymore. I mean, I will travel. I have traveled a couple times since then. There are times where travel is absolutely necessary, but I think just doing that and making it feel like that's productivity, I think that is a thing of the past, which I think you could fool yourself into thinking, if I've traveled somewhere, I am now by definition productive. So I think that that is permanently changing. And just, I think advertising is famous for the, like, we all must get together Sunday night and work till 3 a.m. and, you know, to figure this out. And it's like, or we could get on a Teams call and work through some things, and we can do it a lot more efficiently and effectively. And I think that, by the way, is by definition more inclusive to kind of people in, to women and men and people in kind of different home situations to be able to work like that. So I think that those are really like positive outcomes.
Sounds like at the end of the day that the company now evaluates success fundamentally differently around all facets of the business because of the pandemic. I mean, you had talked about, you know, before this perception or belief of travel, you know, needed to travel to see the clients, to be productive, drive engagement, ultimately probably expand the business in that way was a measure of success. And now there's a shift in that thinking that that isn't the way that we need to evaluate success anymore. And in fact, there are now permanent changes that the organization is doing that is certainly more effective, inclusive, efficient, and that could still drive growth.
Yeah. And I think it's like finding that balance, which, listen, no one has figured it out. It will be interesting to see how it does work out. Like, we're of the mindset that we could make this virtual thing work because we're borrowing on that like equity of connection and humanity that we had in an organization. And for people who have, there's been plenty of people who have joined and never met a soul, you know, in our organization, there are clients that we have never met. Now we've only worked virtually. And I do think there is something missing without that human connection or those moments of human connection that we have to kind of like refill the bucket, if you will, because right now I feel like we're borrowing from a lot of that in a lot of things that we do, but it's trying to figure out like what is the right balance. And then I think there will be some messiness with when we go back. Like next week, I am traveling for a few days and the rest of the world will be on Teams or on Zoom. And on Teams and Zoom, sometimes you can power through 5x the amount of stuff, maybe not with kind of like all the level of care, but I'm going to be doing one thing for 3 days next week instead of the 55 things that I might do over 3 days of Zoom. How do you kind of like, in a hybrid world, which we're going to, how do you make sure those two things are in sync? Because it's almost like two different gears that, and it was all fine when everyone's virtual, we're all in the same gear and we're kind of like going through this together. It's going to be interesting when like the gears keep shifting and trying to make sure that there's like alignment between people. The other thing that I think is super interesting, and I'm continually amazed at the stories that people, or how people fill in the blanks when they don't have all of the information, and the stories they tell themselves when they don't have all of the information about what's going on. And some of that I think will be mitigated when there's a little bit more in-person time, when you can realize like, no, there's not a conspiracy against you, or no, the like, you know, account is not going away just because we hired one person in another city. Like, or there's so many things that kind of like go through the game of telephone when it's virtual. And I think that's part of just human nature, but I feel like I'm looking forward to a time when we can maybe tamp that back a little bit. Cause it's, I mean, I feel bad for someone who's just started a job or who is younger in their career, sitting in their parents' basement, trying to like do their work every day without the getting to learn by osmosis by all these people around them, especially when you're kind of in a collaborative environment. So it's going to be interesting. The next couple years might be harder on some level, easier certainly on some level, but harder on some level too.
But this gets back to an important point that you made about how you in particular define success, but it sounds like how VML in general is looking to define success, which is that need to continuously learn and try, because nobody has the answer, and that maybe there might be short-term clarity on a particular goal or outcome that's desired, and the way to get there, it's clear on how to get there. But on a more macro level perspective, it's hard. Nobody really has that concrete understanding of when that end goal of when things will be a little more steady state for life around the world for everyone, which then causes some of that angst. So at the end of the day, when we can redefine that success, where it's about constantly just learning and making progress along the way, that can help us feel grounded, which is where my last questions was, you know, what do you feel? Now, we've asked this earlier, but I'm going to ask this again anyway. But again, how has your definition of career success evolved from our early days in the workforce to now, as well as what was important to do in order to progress the way you wanted so you could achieve the right fit for you?
I think probably, you know, early in, and this is probably not uncommon, that kind of like earlier in my career, I was maybe more motivated by kind of reaching a certain title by a certain age. And that sort of seemed to be a measure of success. And then maybe looking at your peer set and seeing and kind of comparing yourself to them. I think that, again, as I've gotten older, I think that for me, the things that are more important to me are how I feel about the people that I'm working alongside of kind of every day, whether I feel like I'm kind of able to be useful. I enjoy working with others who maybe are kind of earlier in their career than I am. So I think the things that are motivating are a little bit different. And then I'm not necessarily, I'm trying, certainly somebody said to me once, comparison is the thief of joy. And so it's like, I think that's probably pretty fair that you just kind of at the end of the day, like have to sort of, you know, live up to your own kind of expectations of yourself, and not just your career expectations, kind of like all the sort of facets of one's life and those expectations, and kind of constantly rebalancing along the way. So I think I'm probably, you know, everybody's a work in progress. Like nobody has it totally figured out, but I think that that's maybe how things have evolved and changed over time for me.
And to close, what's the best work advice you've ever received?
Actually, I think the best work advice I've received is, you know, Connie and I had the same mentor and manager, a guy named Kevin Garten. Actually, I worked for him at two different jobs. And actually, when he left the job, one of those jobs, I was deciding between two different roles. And I remember going out to lunch with him, and, you know, I thought he was super old and wise in his 40s. And I don't even remember how old I was, but I just said like, oh my gosh, I've got this job opportunity. And what should I take? And then he was like, I don't know. I mean, the people who are the smartest, the manager you like, and like, are you engaged in the mission? And I was like, well, that seems too simple, or like a little bit like, aren't you old and wise and have something better? But maybe now that I'm old and wise, I'm kind of like, actually, I think it's what I just told you. It's like, do you enjoy the people you work with? Do you think they're smart and engaging? Are you engaged in kind of like the mission and the vision of what you're trying to achieve? Do you like the person you work for? I'm like, I don't know. It seems like it's maybe too simple. And I know there's so much more than that. And do you feel valued? Like, you know, I mean, I was actually talking to one of our HR leaders the other day. And it's kind of like, if you like the people you work with, like the work you do, and you feel valued, and compensation is a part of value, certainly, then that's awesome. And sometimes one of those things might be out of balance and you have to kind of work to rebalance it. But if someone comes to me and wants to leave the company, and it's like, they don't like the people they work with, they don't like the work they do, and they don't feel valued, then they should leave. Like, and I don't mean that in any kind of like mean way, but this is, then they're not in the right place, you know? So I think that kind of taking stock of that every once in a while, it doesn't mean you have to love every task of every day, but gosh, if it's all a slog and you hate the people and you don't feel valued, I don't know, maybe you should start looking at something else. So yeah, that's maybe answers to your question and maybe a question you didn't ask either. So,
well, yes, Kevin was always quite wise and he was on this podcast as well. So he was actually episode 27 talking about how to truly think about a strategy and what it means. And now it fundamentally helps your business. And finally, what's the best way listeners can connect with you?
Great question. So what is a good way to connect with me? I'm on LinkedIn, Jen McDonald. You can find me via mlynr.com. I'm on Twitter. I'm not that active, but I do look at it. JMac270. So you can, I will see your mess. If you DM me on Twitter, I will absolutely see it because it's not like I'm this massive tweeter. So those are good ways to connect with me. I'm so glad that you connected with Kevin too. I actually feel like I've learned a lot. I learned a lot from Kevin as a manager and a mentor, and frankly, somebody who thought about strategy a lot. So
I agree.
I should email him and tell him that.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show today and really providing such a great example of how a very large global organization has really transformed into an incredibly fluid one, be able to create that traction, but how you guys have fundamentally redefined progress as success and finding that balance to continually determine the best way to align people and create the best fit going forward. So thank you.
You're welcome. And yeah, I mean, listen, I think that I will not say that it's been easy for us, but the reality is that the world is kind of in a state of change on so many levels. And I'm not just talking about the pandemic, but digital transformation, business transformation, kind of marketing transformation and
human transformation.
And so I think kind of anytime that you can, we're in a client service industry. And if you're empathetic to the clients that you're working with, and also recognizing that I think this actually last year, no one had the answer. So kind of, I think actually built stronger partnerships, but kind of recognizing that people are at the center of that. That's at least a good step for success.
So what I loved about this interview with Jen is learning about how VML YNR has truly employed the agile way of thinking and doing to adapt to this new world that we're in order to make sure that not only were their clients successful because they had fundamentally a human-centered focus to what it is they were doing, but they also ensured that they had an incredibly human-centered focus with their employees to ensure that they felt supported, they felt needed, that they took into account their strategic plans in a lot of ways and what their needs and wants were so that together they could effectively test, learn, and iterate to build ultimately a level of alignment for everyone in the organization, which then enabled people to flex up, down, left, and right and be fluid in a way that didn't create angst, that didn't create confusion, but yet, if anything, created an ability to build towards momentum in the right way for individuals within the company, as well as for their clients. So recognizing that at the end of the day, this is one whole business. There are lots of different facets to this business, but looking at it its entirety and making sure that the people, the process, the clients they serve, the leadership are all aligned around the right thing, which is people-focused, human-focused at the end of the day, is where they were able to really create that level of fluidity and build that fluid organization that could truly successfully adapt in this new world where uncertainty is the new certainty. The main thing that I saw that she was saying is that you need to be an empathetic leader. You have to think about the people at the end of the day in order to establish the relevant strategies and implementation plans to move forward towards the best business outcomes. If you start there and you get everybody aligned on the same page on what the right thing is, you're going to be able to build towards that. But it does require a level of agility, flexibility, transparency, and trust, and ultimately communication to get there. And that's so important for organizations to recognize that it is people that have to come together, and it's not a hierarchical top-down structure. It is a two-way street between the employees and the leadership team that will help move things forward.
Thanks for listening to Strategic Momentum. To connect with me, you can find me on LinkedIn at Connie W. Steele or on Instagram at Connie Wang Steele. If you've liked what you heard, please follow the show and share this episode with friends and colleagues. You can also get show notes, links, and more tips and advice from this episode at strategicmomentum.co. I'm Connie Steele, and you've been listening to the Strategic Momentum Podcast.